Today on Seculo, a shocking speech spewing anti-American hate is uncovered.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
You know, it's that beautiful time of year after, you know, school is coming to a close. You get to maybe attend a family member's graduation ceremony and hear a student give an inspiring speech about the future, young people, you know, whether they're college students. You might hear it at a local high school, either valedictorians or a speaker maybe chosen by their peers to speak. So different schools do different things. Maybe a law school where you're looking more towards the professional world of really starting a career that you're about to embark on specifically. So a little bit more, again, tied to a little older student, a little more with more education and kind of a more specific job that you are going to be doing for the world. And that's what we have at City University of New York School of Law. Now, you know CUNY because last week we talked about how at one of their schools, they have multiple undergraduates. At Hunter College, the pro-life students who were tabling there, and we're working with that organization right now at the ACLJ, the pro-life students who were tabling there were attacked by a professor, like an art professor, who attacked their table. Then when the New York Post went to that professor's home, knocked on her door, remember she came out with a machete and put it on the reporter's neck and then chased the reporter down the street with a machete?
Just last week.
This is in that school system, but they also have inside the school system a specific, they have one law school, the CUNY School of Law, so City University School of Law. And they chose as their speaker, the students chose Fatima Musa Muhammad as their speaker. Now, I wish I could say that her name isn't going to give away exactly what she's going to say. But unfortunately, in this situation, it does. But it's actually worse than what you're probably thinking, because she doesn't just take hatred towards America. She takes it towards the Jews. She takes it towards the capitalist. She takes it towards law itself. Let's start off with her attack on why even go to law school, Fatima, if you're going to attack the idea of law.
Like many of you, I chose CUNY School of Law for its articulated mission to be law in the service of human needs. One of very few legal institutions created to recognize that the law is a manifestation of white supremacy that continues to oppress and suppress people in this nation and around the world.
So why go to law school? Why spend your time learning the law of the oppressor?
Yeah.
If you think it is, again, a system that is only used to oppress and suppress people in this nation. So she's talking about the United States of America, that our legal system is used as a manifestation of white supremacy to continue to oppress and oppress people in this nation and around the world. I want you to understand, while students selected this speaker, we've already heard from staff members at City University of New York School of Law who said no one speaks there without their speech, Logan, going through the approval process.
Yeah.
This is just bite one.
Yeah, I have to say, this is nothing. You're not hearing like the shocking part yet. This is more the, oh yeah, maybe this is the general liberal, you know, college kid talking point. But yeah, it definitely keeps going.
By the end of this thing, it's like a call to violence in our nation's elementary schools. Kidding you. Should we play another one or should we save it for when we come back? Should we play one more for people? Okay, let's play it for people again. Let's play a little. We'll give you a little more Fatima. We'll take your calls 1-800-684-3110. Don't you love funding this with your taxpayer dollars?
May the rage that fills this auditorium dance in the hallways of our elementary schools. May it be the fuel for the fight against capitalism, racism, imperialism, and Zionism around the world.
Because Logan, if you don't like capitalism, you also can't like Jews.
No, and it gets there.
And we
directly.
And she said it. Capitalism.
Oh, yeah, Zionism. Yeah.
Zionism. So you got to.
The dirty dislike word of Zionism.
The U.S. Markets, free market system, but you also have to dislike the Jews. And let's hope that it starts dancing through the halls of our elementary schools. I'm sorry, Fatima. Our elementary schools are not like the schools run by Hamas, which she also defends in her speech. We'll get to that. She actually defends a recognized terrorist group. Because in those schools in Gaza Strip, in Hamas, those little kids are taught to be terrorists, running through their schools with rage. You know, they put on the headbands and the fake AK-47s and they run through the school.
We got a lot more to break down from this. Again, state-funded, city-funded university.
We're also looking at what we can do to take action here. There's a freedom of information law. It's called the FOIL law in New York. So we're not just talking about it. We're going to do something about it at the ACLJ. the radicalism that we are seeing in our nation's college campuses, this is going to impact us. It already is impacting us, by the way. That's why we're talking about it right here in our own country. Because if you're going out of, coming out of law schools in America, this radicalized, that the student body chose Fatima Muhammad, that they thought, you know what? She represents us. We are going to choose her as the student body to speak on behalf of all the students here. All of our families are here and all of the professors are there. And by the way, the school has got to still approve the text. Like, if you know, I think she's calling for violence in this. I think there's some lines in here that are not just political statements, but that are, that go too far for a speech of this kind, especially attacking specific racial groups. Like, you should not be able to do that. Attacking Jews should not be acceptable in a speech to a law school. And again, I'm a free speech advocate, but this is not the right place, right? It's not the right place. It's not like the public sidewalk here. This is, again, a school that could have done. If you got up there, okay, let's say that school elected me to give the speech, and I wanted to start with a line of, you know what, Muslims, too many of them are terrorists. So many of them are terrorists, actually, that even even if it's not the majority of them, so many support it. Let's just deport all of them.
Yeah.
I didn't say kill them.
Yeah.
I just said deport all of them. You think they'd let me give that speech?
I don't think so.
I wouldn't give it, by the way. I wouldn't make that speech, but that's just a hypothetical. Clarify. She's talking about the destruction of an entire group of people.
Yeah.
Let's continue to play it. I want you to continue to see what your taxpayer dollars go to.
I think for those who aren't watching, because some people are watching, you need to see the visual. So I need to make sure they know this isn't just a student out on a quad a statement.
This is the formal graduation ceremony.
Yeah, this is the formal cap and gown, the whole nine. So I just want you to have a visual of what you're hearing here. You're not just hearing, because who cares what a student would say, you know, out on the streets, like I said, in the quad yelling. They always are yelling something. This is at your graduation. So imagine all the families sitting there in the audience hearing this.
In this moment of celebrating who we are, I want to celebrate CUNY Law as one of the few, if not the only law school, to make a public statement defending the right of its students to organize and speak out against Israeli settler colonialism.
She's glad. Woo! Yeah, I mean, you see, this law school is supporting her.
Yeah, I like the woo girls.
This is for
the anti-Israel.
What are they wooing? And what are they professing? This law school, first of all, yeah, okay, your law school lets you speak? I mean, see, some of it is she's trying to just talk about basic free speech, which she probably hates. At the same time, what the difference is in this speech, Logan, is she's trying to constantly say that the law school is doing this. Now, we believe her giving this speech, the law school has gotten themselves in trouble because there's federal laws that prohibit you from supporting racism. There's federal laws on the BDS movement.
Yes, I mean, they're not talking about that. And this is coming from a place of a public institution.
That she is claiming supports and funds the BDS movement, which then would put their federal funding in jeopardy.
Good.
Right. So, I mean, that's why we are playing through this. This school could face serious consequences. In fact, they took the speech down off YouTube initially. So they figured it out.
They know.
They know. They knew it was not only just going to be a story on TV or something that people would talk about. They know that it could actually have an impact on their financial future. Now, quickly, they had to put the speech back up because you think those kids took that? Imagine those radical kids that they've created at that law school. Do you think they accepted that speech being taken down off YouTube? Absolutely not.
No.
So they still bit right back to them. But they are responsible for creating these Americans who are going to destroy our country if they become the norm, if this thinking becomes the norm. Where are we going to next?
We've got the lens that she needs to process the statement of the school through.
Let's just keep going.
Absent a critical imperialism, settler colonialism lens, our work and this school's mission statement is void of value.
All right. Let's break that one down.
Yeah, that's a bunch of words there because we start getting settler colonialists.
Absent a critical imperialism
settler colonialism lens.
Okay, that's just one phrase.
Yeah. Absent a critical imperialism, settler colonialism lens, our work and the school's mission statement is void of value.
Okay, so that means
that is her school's pseudo-intellectual college word
salad. She's attacking her school's mission statement because it is. You can only see it positively through a pro-colonial.
And we can't even figure it out.
No,
you can't figure this out.
You know what that is? That is what you're saying. Look, this is a you are a law school a student. You think you're a genius.
You think you're smart.
You use a bunch of words from a thesaurus, and those words, it doesn't even make sense.
No.
But, you know, this is my one hope, is that most kids see this and go, this is a psycho. This is like the kid in my class I don't want to be friends with.
But elected to be the person speaking.
No, I mean, maybe at some of these radical law schools, yes. But if overall we keep them at radical law schools,
yeah.
Like, aren't most college kids, you would hear this girl and you would go, I don't really want to be. I don't want to be her friend.
Yeah, we talked about this. It's like, man, I don't want to go to college right now. It sounds so not
if
fun.
If this is what it's like,
I know.
College used to be cool.
Yeah.
You went to college to go have some fun. Now, I think the SEC is still pretty fun.
Yeah, I think there's probably still fun happening, but not in the CUNY law system, clearly.
No, I think fun there is just burning the Israeli flag.
Yeah, exactly.
Or the American flag.
What'd you guys do this weekend? Oh, it was a rager. Yeah.
Yes, we ate hummus and denounced Jews.
Yeah. All right. Should we take a phone call?
Okay, what about the terrorism support?
Oh, do we have that too?
Because she actually does call for, she actually, of course, the Muslim speaker student attacks the U.S. justice system for imprisoning terrorists who funded $12 million to Hamas.
Here's a very quick bite, yeah.
That there are Palestinian political prisoners like HLF in U.S. prisons.
That's the Holy Land Foundation, indicted by those individuals were indicted by the Department of Justice in 2009. Because they sent illegally $12 million to a U.S.-recognized terrorist organization, Hamas, in the Gaza Strip, which regularly carries out terror attacks against Israel, an ally of the United States, that has also carried out terrorist attacks that has killed Americans. Yeah. So she's defending that as well.
Yeah, I think part of it has to do with, I mean, obviously this is a Muslim student, but even in this, I put this in maybe the people that elected her, the people that are cheering, all those type things, is you are 20... plus years now post 9/11.
Huh.
So that means these kids were either not born or I guess they were probably very young.
Yeah.
Let's say at most they were 4 years old.
They weren't living it.
They didn't understand what it actually felt like to go through. And the further you get away from it, the further, especially with the conversation shifts and the topic shift, and you have more of sort of the liberal talking points winning the day in media, this is what happens.
Yeah. I think this is, again, you get to a level where reality is void of reality. You go to law school to practice law. When did you go to law school just to become a hate speaker? Or these, again, how is she going to pass the bar exam? I hope she's very smart, because obviously the school wasn't teaching her anything about that. What does she know about contracts? Could she help you if you were in a family law dispute? If you were in a divorce, could Fatima represent you? Could she help you with setting up a will or filing a document in a court system? Or is she just going to law school to learn to hate America and to burn down the system? Well, then why even go learn about the system? Isn't that a waste of time? Or is Fatima a hypocrite who is going to go work in the legal system to make lots of money and work for that exact colonial system that she says she wants to burn down, but a few years from now, looking back, will say, well, I was a crazy college student then. I hope so.
Yeah, that's what you hope.
The hope is that
time affects all of us.
But what scares me is that I've got young kids who are going to go through these systems. I'm like, where would I even want them to go at this point?
For college?
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
And then law school, you're like, it's even worse. The higher up you go,
I think that's
used to get
happen.
The more nerdy, the higher up you went, the more nerdy and mundane and boring it got.
Yeah.
Now it's like the higher up you go, the more radical and crazy it is.
Yeah, and I think that it used to be when, you know, if you had two resumes in front of you, they always say one had a college degree, one didn't. Other than that, they matched. You would go with the person with the college degree. Now, I don't know if that's necessarily the case. Now I'd be like, where is this coming from? Yeah, okay. Did you survive this or did you embrace this?
Yes. Were you there as a, again, someone hiding in the corner?
Yeah.
Or were you also stopping on our flag while you were attending the school?
Yeah, and now there's probably photo and video evidence of all of it, unlike when you were in college.
They put it up themselves.
Yeah.
For TikTok views.
I like the way you said that. It was a nice alliteration. It was kind of like the same alliteration as critical imperialism, settler colonialism, which is just fun to say. That's like a Dr. Seuss for anti-American speech.
There's so many things contradicting themselves in that sense.
Yeah, I know.
And to see it through a lens.
And we're laughing about it, but it's not something to laugh about, because the issues are far deeper than just one person's speech.
I don't laugh. I mean, you do have to keep some humor to fight in America. I don't think this is a one-off. I think this is pretty normal inside higher levels of education. Now, we don't always get it caught on camera, but when we do, we need to expose it, because we're all making those decisions, right, about our kids being going to school. Hey, at the ACLJ, we want you to keep going to law school. We always need to, you know, we're always hiring new attorneys and new people who go to law school. Thankfully, there are still some law schools left that you can trust sending your kids to. Regent University is one of them.
Yep, absolutely.
Where we've just, I will tell people, our latest two hires for ACLJ, both Regent University School of Law grads.
At least know they've an idea of what's going on.
You know, we also know that at Regent, which is more conservative leaning, they actually learned how to practice law. That's why their bar passage rate is higher than any other school in the
Not
state of Virginia.
Not just activism.
Right. There's a part of those classes, of course, you can take, like the con law class, the ACLJ type class. Yeah. But that's not the focus. The focus is practicing law. We'll take your calls, 1-800-684-3110. We'll be right back. Comfort and Joy out on Rumble. Since we all need to go to law school at Regent to become local judges. And you know what? Also, I would add to that local DAs. But that's what Regent is doing, and schools like that is doing are doing. As obviously, they encourage that students to go into the government, to go into those places to affect change, not just from the outside like we do at the ACLJ, but also from the inside. And I will tell you, those Regent graduates. Law graduates have actually learned how to practice law. So when they get into the interviews, they're very impressive. You could put them up against any other law school student because even the very, very top 1% of the kids who go to the Ivy League law schools right now, most of them are not on an actual legal education track. They are on a social justice track, which means when they finish law school, they take a 6-week bar exam class and they hopefully pass the bar because they're smart enough to generally
to learn
to put that knowledge in 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Because they don't learn it in law school.
They're there to become the next senator, president,
I mean,
or governor.
The number one bar passage rate in the state of Virginia. That's with schools like University
UVA,
and George
Virginia
Mason,
Tech,
W&L,
yeah.
William & Mary. I mean, the list goes on. The reason why is because, again, what I said, they actually teach law. So when you get to that bar review class before you take the bar exam, you've already learned that before. It's just a refresher. We're actually teaching you to become a lawyer, not teaching you to try to how to burn down flags. By the way, all this activism, too, couldn't she have learned this in undergrad? Does she need to go to law school?
It feels like an undergrad graduation person. Does it feel like someone coming from law school?
That's what I mean. It's like they're not teaching adults.
Yeah. And then we're going to get to, because we talked about the anti-American part of this. It does go even beyond the, obviously, she's talking about that in sort of code with the imperialist.
Capitalism.
But it gets very specific in terms of police.
Oh, yeah.
And the NYPD. I think we should play that bite. Let's take a listen. This is talking about, you know, the boys in blue in New York. Let's hear it.
We leave our classes and we leave the school to a world that so desperately needs us to stand alongside those who have given up for the sake of liberation far more than we could imagine. So may the joy and excitement that fills the auditorium here, may the rage that fills this auditorium dance in the hallways of our elementary schools.
Yes, we know that she wants to dance in the hallways of the elementary school. Do we have the other bite?
Yeah, bite 20 is what we want to go for.
And we did all of this in spite of the racism, in spite of the selective activism, the self-serving interests of CUNY Central, an institution that continues to fail us, that continues to train and cooperate with the fascist NYPD, the military, that continues to train IDF soldiers to carry out that same violence globally.
So tying in the NYPD.
So she's saying that if you went to, let's say you served in the IDF but were accepted into the CUNY schools system, you shouldn't be allowed in.
Yeah, and also the NYPD. And I like that she calls out her own university in this part.
Oh,
she
yeah.
And I love that the university approved it. That's like the most New York thing ever to be like, you know what, in this commission speech, let's make sure we take our own hits. We know we are just oppressing these students. Exactly. We know the central institution, we continue to fail them because we're supporting the NYPD. But you know that probably some of the people approving this do feel that way because they're the same people taking machetes to pro-lifers' necks.
I mean, right. When you put all this together with bigger context, you have a professor. I don't know if we still have the images that we could show people last week, but literally a professor who knocked down a pro-life student's table that was there legally and against Students for Life. And we're working with them right now at the ACLJ. Then New York Post goes
image
to
the, on the screen if you're watching.
New York Post goes to the professor's door. Not only does she open a door, she puts a machete on the reporter's neck. This is a professor inside the same school system. So these are not just the kids that have gone radical. The professor then chases them down the street with a machete. These are extremists that want to chop heads off, Logan.
Yeah.
Have we seen that before? Yeah. It was called the Islamic State.
Mm-hmm.
And they're right here in our own country. At our own schools, teaching kids that this is the way to behave.
Let's go ahead and take some calls because we're going to have a lot. We have a packed show coming up in the second half. Rick Grinnell's joining us. Harry Hutchins joining us. Let's make sure we get to some of these calls. Let's go first, actually, to Bill, who's calling in Wyoming on line three. Bill, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm really flabbergasted because this young lady making all these speeches, what she's saying is that if anybody wants to set up a business to make money, like selling olives, selling fish, or clothing, apparently they're white racists no matter what country they're from. And America and these other countries are under a SOFA agreement, which means if the country doesn't want us, they can kick us out anytime they want to. She's arguing against something.
Yeah, listen, it's this idea, it's this false narrative that somehow we're the worst country to live in the world. But, you know, she's an immigrant from Yemen. I don't see in her speech she's saying, I can't wait to take my skills that I've learned here as a woman who gets to give this proud speech and move back to Yemen, where guess what? If I tried to give a speech on the street, they would put me in prison because I'm a woman. Okay, so she's a proud Muslim, except for she wouldn't go back to those countries.
No.
Let me see how long her just speaking on the street, even if her content wasn't something they necessarily disagreed with. You don't have a right to do that in those countries, which are, by the way, Iranian-backed failed terrorist states.
Let's keep going the calls. Let's go to Chris in Nevada on line two. Chris, welcome.
Hi. 2 points. One, I doubt she wrote that speech herself. And two, if a Christian student were to talk about Jesus, they wouldn't even make it to the podium. Thank you.
You know why they would make it? Unfortunately, at this school system, there's no way that student would have been chosen by the student body. Even if they were talking about Jesus as a compassionate leader, not even Jesus as a religious savior, but just as a figure throughout history that we should all want to be more like Christ-like and peaceful and loving and caring about our neighbors, especially at a time where crime is on the rise and drug crisis is on the rise. You could actually see how that speech would work at this time right now in New York, where you could use examples of leaders who have taken love and peace, but go to the streets with that. But again, would never happen because this is not a one-off student getting up to be a jerk. This is who the students chose to speak and who the school approved the speech from. And it's the same university system where professors chase you down the streets with machetes.
Speaking of that, we do need to quickly bring up a victory they had in the ACLJ.
That's right.
Kind of divert real quick. We only have a couple minutes, but I think you should talk about that.
We talked about this. There was a situation ago in a Tennessee middle school student who wore a cross around his neck to school. When the child entered the school library for a book fair, he was greeted by a teacher who took the cross off the student's neck. Once we were made aware of the alarming incident and the student's mother contacted us, we sent initially a legal letter to the school explaining in detail why the teacher's actions were inexcusable and a violation of the student's right, not to mention psychologically harmful to the child as well. I mean, there were some demeaning words there said. The school has reached out to the ACLJ, has also worked with the students and the student's family to right the wrong. I'm not going to get into more details of that because some of these cases, again, involve students and young people. We can't get into everything. Yeah. But I do want to say because the ACLJ and your support of the ACLJ, we stepped up and resolved this for that student and their family in the school system, and they're able to return to school, you know, next year's school year without fear that this is going to happen again because they wear a cross, and that without fear that they are going to be somehow retaliated against because they spoke up against the school system.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's a big victory here at the ACLJ.
Those are one of those quick victories.
Seems small, but they're quick, but still months, by the way, of work.
Oh, yeah. It's just, I think what I want to explain to people is there's no case too small. We've really been encouraged that more of you are reaching out to us. We want to remind you that we're here for you. If you feel like your rights have been violated, your kids' rights have been violated, you contact us at aclj.org/help. That's aclj.org/help. And right there, you put in your information, an ACLJ attorney will contact you. And don't feel like it might not be right for the ACLJ. We'll let you know if it's not. If it's not something that's in our wheelhouse that we can do as the ACLJ, we'll let you know. But if you're not sure, lead on the side of, let me send it to the ACLJ. Let me see. And we will, again, we go through it ourselves, folks. I mean, so I'm going to be reviewing it. If you send it in, aclj.org/help. We'll be right back on Seculum. Let's sing it
tonight. Keeping you informed and engaged. now more than ever. This is Seculo. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
All right, welcome back to Seculo. We are taking your calls to 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Coming up the second half hour of the broadcast, Rick Rennell. A couple issues there. We're going to talk about the drone strike in Moscow and how this ongoing conflict is affecting the United States and continues to affect the United States, and how it seems to be escalating. But Rick was also just in Serbia and Albania. And then while he was there, and I think traveling back, we've got NATO soldiers, that includes U.S. troops, occupying parts of Kosovo again, which again is like a throwback to the 1990s.
Yeah. Clinton era.
And Rick is very concerned about this and why we again need to remind ourselves that these kind of leaders, we've seen it under Democrats multiple times when these felt like these situations had been resolved in a positive way, where Albania and Serbia were being able to work together and Kosovo is kind of in the middle there. And has been unfortunately played a role where it's been tough because it's in the middle of those two. But things have gotten better. And like the Abraham Accords, they just let all of that work go by the wayside. And now we've got war in Ukraine. We've got the Saudis having to make deals with the Iranians because they're scared that we're not going to have their back. And we've got now we've got, again, maybe conflict again in Kosovo.
Yeah, and there's really no one who can speak better into that than Rick, and Rick will be on in the next segment, so you're going to want to stay tuned
and
for that.
Harry Hutchinson, from our director of policy, the budget deal. Listen, I know that there. I feel for some of these Republicans having to sell this because we only have the House of Representatives, and remember, Biden wouldn't even meet with them until they proved that they could raise the debt ceiling on their own, and they did that through a House vote. They got some concessions out of Biden. We don't know how this vote's going to go down because there's a lot of Republicans, I would say, who say, listen, this is best you could do. We don't have the Senate. We don't have the presidency. So don't expect us to be able to get everything you want.
Yeah.
They cut some funding from the IRS. They didn't fund all, but not all of it. They got like $1 billion of the $80 billion cut. And I pointed out, you know, if that's what concerns me is that there's some very small victories. And it's whether or not there'll be enough Republicans. We'll see where the grassroots is. And so I'd love to hear from you on that. You've got time to call in now, get that call in. Do you think your Republican rep should vote for this budget deal? Do you think this is as good as we can get right now, basically? Give us a call, 1-800-684-3110.
Or if you just have questions about it, because then a lot of – I saw every podcast that I listened to was putting out how we can explain to you the debt ceiling deal. I feel like it was one of those things that kept coming back up because people are confused. So if you even have a specific question, we're happy to try to take those calls with Harry in the last segment of the show.
That's right, 1-800-684-3110. I did want to kind of summarize, too. It's all we were talking about with what was happening at the City University of New York. One, at a Hunter College, we're working with Students for Life there. If that escalates to the next level, we will be more involved in the ACLJ. At this specific issue, we're looking at under the basically their FOIA laws. It's called the FOIA law. It's the Freedom of Information Law in New York for New York State. We're looking how the ACLJ is going to file in this specific because of the student's speech at the law school graduation. Did they violate potentially federal law when it comes to BDS and supporting boycott, divestment, sanctions, which has been a problem with the City University of New York school system before that we've been fighting back against, but they can lose funding because of that. So this speech may have actually brought on, it might be why they tried to delete it. You know, initially they pulled it off of YouTube. So this speech might bring them more trouble than just a crazy speaker and bad negative attention. So we will see. It's getting certainly a lot of attention on TV.
Yeah.
Every time I look up.
Well, it's a big story. And, you know, it came across my feed really through a lot of people, even in sort of pop culture. I saw it first from Bruce Pearl, who's the college basketball coach for Auburn, who was a big pro Israel supporter. And that's the first place I saw it. So I knew when he was talking about it, it had gone beyond just sort of the little circle of that. Because he always says, you know, I don't like making these kind of statements, but there are times when I feel like I have to. And maybe we can reach out to Bruce, see if we can get his thoughts as well. And he's coming from a university standpoint. You know, he's representing Auburn. He was the coach for Tennessee as well. So a guy who has been through sort of the university system many a times, knows what you can, can't say probably. But he even thought this was way too far. We will be taking your calls coming up, 1-800-684-3110. Rick Rennell will be joining us. Again, support the work of the ACLJ. We just had a victory, and there's a new article on that as well. So if you want to know a little bit more details about that cross situation, go to aclj.org right now, where you can not only look at all the great content we put out, but also support the work with a charitable donation. We appreciate it. We'll be right back.
Secchio. We're joined now by our senior advisor, foreign policy and national security, Rick Rednell, who was just in Serbia and Albania. And Rick, I guess, was it while you were traveling back or even while you were still there that now there's been NATO troop involvement in Kosovo? And I just want you to explain to kind of people, it's kind of a reminder when they hear Kosovo, and for those who remember, I mean, they kind of think back to the 1990s, which may have been the last time they really focused it on it. But kind of remind people again about why it's significant that NATO troops, and I think that involves some U.S. troops as well, are having to take over parts of Kosovo and government offices in Kosovo.
Yeah, so what we've had in the NATO forces is they've been on the outskirts, away from specific areas where Kosovo and Serbia have had some tensions. And what happened over the last couple of days is that the prime minister of Kosovo, who is just a radical, he decided to force his way, his people, into municipal buildings in a section of Kosovo that is governed by Serbs. It gets a little complicated, but within this area of Kosovo is a highly majority Serb area, and past agreements between the EU and the US have said, in order to not inflame tensions, let's go slow on this area. Let's figure out how people can live next to each other. But for now, no one should be pushing the limits. And the prime minister of Kosovo decided to send in his people and take over an area that is majority Serbs, which inflamed tensions. The EU has condemned the prime minister of Kosovo's actions. Anthony Blinken has condemned the prime minister of Kosovo's actions. Many Trump administration officials, former officials, have done the same. And so what happened over the weekend is that NATO troops moved into the area to protect the buildings, and skirmishes and fighting began. And we should be very clear that violence against anyone is wrong, especially NATO troops that are there to designed to keep the peace. I have been very vocal about calling upon the Serbian government, as well as the government in Kosovo, to dial back their rhetoric, dial back all of their belligerent actions, mainly from the prime minister of Kosovo. It's been a real problem. But this matters to our listeners because it's mainly American troops. These are Iowa National Guard troops that are under the jurisdiction of NATO, and they're the ones that are patrolling now, and the American people are paying for this. I believe that the solution has always been for American leadership, but Joe Biden, after the Trump administration, decided that his policy would be to remove the American leadership and let the Europeans take 3 years and try to figure it out. And by all practical purposes, the situation has gotten worse.
But you've done a lot of work in this part of the world, Rick. And you were, I remember when you kind of started doing that work outside of the administration in a private capacity, and you kept doing the work that you did in the inside the administration, that there were a lot of positives happening between that. It wasn't like things were perfect, but it was on a positive track. It kind of reminded me of like the Abraham Accords. There was positive movement. It didn't mean that things are going to be perfect yet, but that these former maybe enemies were becoming more and more interested in working together or economic agreements together, and maybe dialing back the idea of having to be violent, and that being the only solution for either side is to somehow, you know, attack the other side using violence. So it seems like, is that where, when you say like the Biden administration just kind of gives, it feels like they just gave up a lot of things that the Trump administration and people like you worked on really and got things to a point that you handed it back off to them, but they just let it go.
Look, when the Trump administration was in, there was a perceived conflict, and many Western companies weren't investing in the Balkans because of this perceived conflict. We made a lot of progress to show people that it was a phony conflict, that there might be feelings, hard feelings on both sides, but that they were beginning to work together. The Biden administration came in, and let me be very clear, the Europeans did not want the Trump administration taking the lead in the Balkans. They were complaining. They said to the Biden team, this is our area. We're in charge. We've been in charge for 20 years. The Americans should back off. And so I've said on this program a lot that the opposite of America first is consensus with the Europeans. Joe Biden decided to have consensus with the Europeans, let the Europeans take back control of the Balkans process. And you see what's happened. Now you've got Europeans condemning the prime minister of Kosovo. No one in Europe or in America or in the Balkans thinks that the situation is better under Joe Biden. They know the situation was much better under Donald Trump.
It was interesting. I saw Novak Djokovic, who's a famous tennis player, and he just won his first round match at the French Open. They write on the cameras. And so he's from Serbia. And he wrote, Kosovo is the heart of Serbia. Stop the violence. For someone who is, he is Serbian. So for him to say that, could you break down even that kind of statement by him?
Well, look, there is a section within Kosovo of Serb majority. And what we've always tried to do is to say, let's talk through who governs that area. Since it's Serb majority, the Serbs should be making the decisions locally. But you've got to understand, too, is that this is under the government of Kosovo, the federal government, so to speak. It's within Kosovo. And so there's this push by the Kosovo government to take totally control over these people and to do it their way, so to speak. And so the problem exists is that within this area of Kosovo, the highly Serbian majority is also an area that has very significant religious Orthodox churches and meaning to many people in Serbia. So they feel like they should be free to go and to have this movement. Look, I agree that, you know, people should be able to live next door to each other when they don't agree. There should be a total free flow of movement. We've got to get to that. But I also believe that the way to do that is to get them working together, building economic programs together, creating jobs for young people, not sitting around a table and trying to figure out who likes each other and demanding that you like each other. This whole idea of you must recognize me and you must not say negative things about me. Who cares if you like each other or not? I believe that the pathway of politicians forcing people to recognize or not de-recognize each other is a waste of time. We should be building infrastructures to create jobs for young people, get people working together economically. Then you can worry about how the hearts and minds change. But you can't force this hearts and minds change immediately. You can't demand that people like each other.
Yeah. Hey, Rick, I wanted to quickly bring up, because there's a lot of people watching right now, specifically about the topic of what was going on at the CUNY system and the speaker there. I know you maybe had some thoughts there and some comments of really what's coming up. You brought up, you know, having to work together, getting people jobs, getting it. When you see this coming out of the university system in America, it's pretty shocking.
It's so radical and shocking what's happening at the City University of New York. I don't understand how people in New York City, the largest city in America, can be so intolerant, and why political leaders in New York are allowing this intolerance. Look, I'm not saying that these radicals should be silenced. They have a right to their voice. But I don't believe that they have a right to spew this hate at a graduation ceremony. Where are the adults in the room? Why isn't the leadership at the City University of New York totally horrified and embarrassed that they have a speaker who is so intolerant and anti-Semitic that the speaker is celebrated in the ultimate ceremony of graduation? It's sad. It shows that New York City is filled with people who are so woke, they don't see their own intolerance, and shame on them. And there should be high condemnation from both sides of the aisle.
Yeah. As always, Rick, we appreciate it. We also really appreciate you educating us on those issues like Kosovo, to just remind people, because I think a lot of people just remember what was going on in the 90s. They know it's a place that's seen a lot of conflict. But then as you've been talking about on this show, we've been talking to people, things that were improving, and we hope that this is just is something that can improve quickly, the tensions settle back down. As always, Rick, we appreciate your insight into all these issues. And I think, you know, I mean, there it's just very interesting to me, because when you have someone at the French Open starts writing about it, and the Serbian, you look at all these things, there's the religious connections there in these parts of the world. I think, again, it's just it's very relevant because we've seen how conflict has broken. Just think about this. It's our Iowa National Guard. I mean, Rick said that. My stomach kind of sank a little.
Yeah.
When I think about the young men and women who serve in the Iowa National Guard are right now trying to defend themselves against a radical government in Kosovo.
It's wild.
An issue which, honestly, most of them...
They never thought they were probably getting themselves into.
Well, you know what, unfortunately, is too many people in our own country don't even know why they're there.
Yeah.
And that's sad.
Probably
because
well.
They're getting injured as we speak. So none have been killed yet, thank God, but they are being injured. They're in an active conflict right now. They call them NATO troops. All of them are from the Iowa National Guard.
Next time, we've got Harry Hutchinson joining us. We already got some calls. We'll take some more. 1-800-684-3110. Going to talk about the debt ceiling, crisis going on there, and the deals. Give us a call. We'll be right back with more on Seculo.
Seculo. One issue I did not want to get through today's show, especially with the holiday. And there was a lot of action over the weekend because of the debt ceiling. And there were reports going back and forth, you know, that there was a compromise that had come together. What was in this compromise? The votes have not happened yet. They're going to be very interesting to watch. So I wanted to bring in Harry Hutchinson, our director of policy. First, Harry, just the basics of what this deal, I mean, again, I feel for the Republicans to some extent. They only have the House. President Biden wouldn't even meet with them until they proved that they could raise the debt ceiling on their own, which they did. They surprised Democrats by extending the debt ceiling for a few weeks and being able to do that vote. So in a sense, that was a good move by them, and they coalesced together. But then now it's like, okay, what did you get in your compromise? Well, I can only say, what can they truly expect to get when they don't control the Senate or the White House? But kind of where do you see things stand right now with the current negotiation of what has been presented to us as something Republicans should support?
Well, I think the agreement, to be fair, is simply a muddle, but it may indeed be the best that Kevin McCarthy could accomplish. So the deal, at least from what I've read, foresees minor reductions in defense spending, minor reductions with respect to the IRS, some caps on discretionary spending. But the real problem, I think, is that so much of the federal budget is already committed for the next 10 to 15 years because we have mandatory spending in the form of Medicare, Social Security, and other social programs. To be clear, the Democrats want more. But also, to be fair to Democrats, it's important to keep in mind that both Democrats and Republicans continue to enjoy spending other people's money. And so the real problem, which the debt ceiling, I think, highlights, is the fact that neither Republicans nor Democrats can restrain themselves when they are in power from spending. And so we have had deficit spending for the last 40 years or so, with a few years of a balanced budget in between. And so the American people and the conservatives in Congress, they're really focused on reducing spending, but they face headwinds ahead. Senator Lindsey Graham, he has come out against the agreement, in part because the agreement makes a minor cut in defense spending, and there are a few things that Lindsey Graham loves more than defense spending.
Hey, I do want to quickly point out, we're going to go take some calls, 1-800-684-3110. Before we do that, there are a lot of you watching right now on Rumble, which is our preferred platform. A lot of you are probably brand new because we're being featured right now on Rumble's homepage. We do this show each and every day. It's part of the ACLJ, much bigger operation, but we do this broadcast each and every day, Monday through Friday at noon Eastern time. We also put out great content throughout the week. What I'm going to ask you to do right now is click that follow button. If you're brand new, and I'm sure thousands of you are, click that follow button. You can obviously watch this live, get notified when we're live, view the Rumble app, or watch it archived on. And again, we have so many great segments and clips. We have a full media team putting out incredible content. I'm going to ask you to do that right now. If you could do it, we really appreciate it. Over 200,000 people have, and it's continuing to grow, and we love our friends at Rumble. Let's go to Kathy, who's calling in the state of Kentucky. You're on line one.
Thank you for taking my call. I would just like to know what exactly would happen should they not reach an agreement on the debt ceiling.
All right. So this is always the scary talking point, which is default. Yeah. Harry, explain that to folks.
Default shutdown, all the things.
Well, yeah. It's a very good question. The real issue, at least in the short run, is if a debt ceiling agreement is not reached in a timely manner, then the United States government will have difficulty borrowing money on global markets. And I think the actual deadline, notwithstanding what Secretary of the Treasury Yellen says, is probably the middle of June. So many U.S. debts, they roll over or they become due. And then the United States has to go out and borrow additional funding. But the Treasury Department lacks the authority to borrow additional monies unless a debt ceiling agreement is indeed reached. And so I think that is the problem. But the fundamental problem is that we continue to spend more money than we have. And right now the vote is, the key vote is Wednesday of this week. The agreement goes before the Rules Committee, and right now it's very touch and go as to whether or not they will agree to pass this vote on the debt ceiling on a preliminary basis.
Yeah, but so it's going to be something we watch all week. So it seems like to me the negotiations aren't completely done. I mean, there's the framework, but you've got senators saying, hey, I'm not voting for this. So if you got one senator saying that, and you get a couple of members of the House saying, I want this, there could be some changes before Wednesday.
I think that's correct, because progressives don't like the deal. Conservatives don't like the deal. Individuals that support the Defense Department don't like the deal. And so the question becomes, will the agreement in principle fall apart?
I don't think it's just that people want to be told how to think, but we have a lot of people in the comments going, well, what's the way is the right way? And yeah. That's sort of one of the problems you have, is that just to explain this, understand how it affects everyday Americans, it gets so in the weeds that it's a bit hard for people. So when they're asking these questions, like we just had a comment, what do you think is the best option to Jordan and to Harry? You know, asking these questions, how do you answer that?
Yeah, I think that, again, you have to look at, like, what are your options? So I think here is, you get the best deal you possibly can and you take it to the next election cycle. I don't think you know what I've seen in the past, shutting things down and us, whether or not it even has that big of an effect, long term it doesn't usually, that if we default on this for 2 days or we're in default, does that have this huge effect? Not necessarily. But politically, Harry, it hasn't really worked for Republicans. It is backfired.
I think that is
every time they do it, the Democrats use it in an ad to say they don't care about you. They're willing to put your Social Security checks and delay your Social Security checks and your Medicare and Medicaid checks. And so even if it's not true, it has not helped us. We need to get more Republicans and we can get a better deal.
I think that is correct. And in the short run, if you don't reach an agreement, interest rates will continue to rise, meaning it will be more difficult to purchase a house going forward.
Yep.
So I think it is important for the American people.
Yeah, I think this time around, when you look at all the actors, I think they would use it, not just a political tool, but if Republicans just said, no, we're not doing this, we're not moving forward, they would use it to do so many things that would affect you today. That it would not just, it was sort of, again, rising interest rates. They would say, oh, this is our reason to raise them more, even more than we initially planned, which hurts a lot of folks out there. So I think I hope that explains it to you very easily, how these immediate consequences of not getting to a deal. So you don't have to be, I don't think you have to be praising every Republican for this deal, but I think you have to be a little realistic. There's times when you take a stand and there's times when taking a stand is going to hurt you. And
this kind of system, politics is nuanced, and you have to be able to at least, you'd rather get 90% there or 2% there than 0% there.
Right. And understand that, you know what? You don't have control of the Senate. You don't have control of the White House.
That's what I mean, yeah.
At least you're getting something back, and you're not giving them an excuse. You're not creating campaign ads for them.
Right.
Because I think that we're in that season right now. I mean, we know we're in that season right now. We'll continue to discuss it, continue to watch it, too, throughout the week to see if it stays on track for the Wednesday vote, to see if it stays on the policy. We encourage you to support the work of the ACLJ at aclj.org. We didn't get into the issue yet with the attacks in Moscow.
Yep.
How that's escalated. So we'll do that tomorrow as well, because the budget goes into that as well.
And we're back this afternoon on the Secular Brothers podcast. Make sure you're watching that. Go to secularbrothers.com. If you're on Rumble, find us on that channel. It's a different channel. Secular Brothers. Search it. Find us there. We'll talk a lot. We have a lot more fun there. So stay tuned. We'll be back later this afternoon on Secular Brothers.